some of the things that were absolute trust builders, if you will, were things like, you know, open and honest communication about like where, you know, what's happening during this change, thinking mm-hmm. about fair treatment of employees. So like, if we have some hard decisions to make, are people treated fairly in that process? Opportunities to voice those concerns around that psychological safety. And then really also like this visible alignment, as you were describing in your strategy example, right? The visible alignment of like why we're making these moves or these pivots, and how does that actually yeah. align to my role in the work I do?
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Kim Bohr. She is the president and COO, or COO, at Spark Effect, where she leads the firm in helping executive teams navigate disruption without fracturing trust. That is a tightrope to walk, if ever there was one. With over 25 years of cross-functional leadership experience, Kim advises leaders on aligning strategy with human-centered practices using Spark Effect Trust Elasticity. And I enunciated that. My dad's proud of my degree right now. which is a research-backed framework for building trust resilience during change. She is a thought leader, author, and host of the Courage to Advance podcast. Welcome to the show, Kim.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here with you.
We're going to have tons of fun. I love it. I love your topics and all these things. We could probably nerd out and people would go, what the heck just happened? But tell me today, Kim, what is on your mind?
You know, trust is on my mind, and what is going on inside our organizations and how well-intended leaders are kind of mucking it up in all the wrong ways. And so I'm really wanting to kind of help people think through that a little bit more.
Man, okay, lots to unpack there. I don't believe that you choose words flippantly. So talk a little bit more about well-intentioned leaders and mucking it up.
Yeah, you know, I think it starts with, when you think about even maybe experiences we've all had in our past, right? I can remember some really definitive experiences where trust was broken and really not able to be regained inside organizations that I was part of. Yeah. And as we are in this now current state of a flux inside of our, you know, US at least based organizations, right? There's just a lot going on. We know that trust is at an all-time low in institutions, and that's really starting to come through inside many of our organizations. And there's mm-hmm. leaders that we work with at Spark Effect that I do in the CEO evaluation and executive level work that are really well-intended, that absolutely believe like trust is absolutely something we want to foster here and are all behind it. And yet in the next breath, literally take an action that is absolutely a trust destroyer. And some of these things are super small. And so I think that although people are well-intended in the fact that they truly believe they're trying to foster greater trust, they're mm-hmm. really making a lot of mistakes that are just eroding it day after day.
So 100% agree. And it's one of those things that it's like, oh, well, they didn't mean to, but how many times can we, I'm not going to say forgive, but how many times can we,
right? It's,
yeah. How many times can we excuse, oh, well, they didn't mean to, that it's like, they may not mean to, but the results are the impact of those choices create a very real and tangible, you know, destruction or erosion of trust. Now, before we get too much further into things, can you talk about what is yours and Spark Effect's definition of trust? Because I think a lot of people would say, yeah, I know what trust is. And you'd say, go ahead, define it. And they're like, it's when you trust someone. And you're like, that's circular, dude. Like, let's try again. So how have y'all defined
trust? So we define it as, you know, yet another one of those strategic KPIs. It's absolutely a measurable indicator that impacts mm-hmm. your revenue, reputation, and retention. So it is a real factor of understanding what's the state of our business, just as other aspects of your business are. And we've been able to absolutely prove that through the research we've done and the measurements we've created. And so really thinking about trust as something that isn't squishy, it actually is something that's very tangible.
Gotcha. Do you think that's the biggest hurdle for leaders to overcome, is is taking trust from this ethereal thing, or trust is a feeling. And maybe it is, but from translating it from what could feel like an invisible force to something that they can almost see, touch, hear, smell, mm-hmm. you know, all those things. Is that the big gap for people to cross?
I think it's the gap of understanding that the measurable aspect, and the fact is that the actions we are taking are contributing or detracting from that ability to build trust and to measure it. So many leaders I've spoken with talk about the fact that they absolutely understand how important trust is, but you can't measure it. We're like, oh, actually, but you can. And even if you didn't think you could, perhaps having an understanding of what destroys trust would really be valuable information to know. We know you can measure it. Let's just get you to understand some of the actions you're taking that perhaps are eroding your good effort. You could think that a lot of times leaders think that, you know, of course they're acting in good intent and they're sharing what they can share and people should just believe that all the time. But inside organizations, it's like the telephone game. And as things get, you know, moved around and we think about how that topic passes through other people's lenses and filters, it comes out to be very different. And we've seen that over and over again.
Right. Which again becomes, it's unintentional. Right.
When we play the telephone, the damage is huge.
Yeah. But the damage is real. Yeah. Even if you're like, oh, well, there was no ill will. Okay. Well, I was perceiving that because of how destructive this was. What do you see? And what has y'all's research shown in terms of what the prevailing wisdom around trust? It sounds like most of the people you talk to understand that it's good and probably important. But what's the wisdom they're operating under? Because otherwise it's sort of the, you know, repeating the same mistakes or repeating the same actions over and over again, expecting a different result. Yeah. They're like, I just want you to trust me. It's like, well, as to quote one of my favorite TV shows, Scrubs, it's like, how am I supposed to trust you saying I can trust you when you're the one I don't know if I can trust? Like it just gets all kind of mucked up. So what is the underlying belief about trust and its importance in leadership that is causing them to miss the boat or maybe not take it far enough in pursuing measurable, actionable steps?
I think it starts with the alignment of what you say you're going to do and then what you actually do, right? So the words and the actions. And so we may say that we are very inclusive into people's different needs around the personal lifestyle of like elder care and child care. Mm-hmm. But if we say you have to be in the office from 9 to 5 with no exceptions, that's really counter to that statement of we trust you, right? And you could think about that too of like, hey, you can, yes, we're totally flexible with you when you want to go, need to go to a doctor's appointment as long as it's in that 9 to 5 kind of time frame. And so that's where those are huge disconnects between what we say and what we do, as that kind of just that little policy example.
Yeah, I can see where that, and I see this all the time, less so on the trust side, more so on like strategic planning side. They're like, we want to go here and we're going to accomplish this, but we're going to do these 3 things that have nothing to do with it. And I'm like, how do you not see that your math isn't mathing?
Right.
That just seems, it's probably because we sit on the outside of things and it's always easier to read the label from outside than inside the jar, so to speak. Is there anything in particular that you think blinds leaders to the dissonance created by, like, even in your policy example that, yeah, well, this is right. Well, but we don't want people taking any time off that they need, right? Yeah. Like where does that dissonance come into where they're like, no, I value trust and no one leaves when they come to work.
Yeah. A lot of it starts with when we consider what's our real clarity around expectation setting of a role. Hmm. And one of the things I think is really important is how we get work done doesn't all have to be uniform. It could be that we accomplish the outcome in very different ways. I can remember my son had a teacher when he was in high school that was really just wanted stuff done in a very precise manner. And my son has ADD. And so for him, he went to his teacher and he advocated for himself. And he said, hey, I understand what you're asking of me. I fall behind when you're asking me to do it this way. Can I do it in this other manner? It was about reading this article and having to translate it and stuff. He said, because I want to complete it and I understand the assignment. And the professor was like, no. He said, no. Right. And so then I remember getting pulled into this after that point and said, he's on board with what you're asking for. He's just asking to consume it differently. Because if he can listen to it from the audio perspective, he could absolutely stay on track and then be able to be able to answer it. So it's that kind of, that's like, you know, in one of those examples of like, what are we trying to accomplish? And then how do we structure it so people can do that within defined parameters, but do it in a way that we can trust that we're going to do it? And I think a lot of that also involves a direct leader's ability to understand what's going on with their team, understand the nuance of what's happening personally and professionally so that they can see where that flexing needs to happen in order to accomplish what the goals are.
Gotcha. It sounds like part of the correction is helping leaders become more outcome focused than like input activity focused.
Absolutely. The, you know, the outcome and the agreement that we may not all need to do it the exact same way to get there. And that if we can sometimes have these other needs in our life met, that we are then able to be better and more productive and more committed in ways that if we're put into a box is really going to ultimately be counterproductive. So you think about some of these, you know, the back to work policies that have happened, and some of them, there's a lot of reason for teams to be back together. There are some teams where it may not make sense, or it may not make sense at the same frequency because of the type of work they do. And when you make those blanket policies and you don't think about, well, where's the most productive aspect of these particular teams doing these particular types of work, you're really just, you're just kind of flexing this power muscle that is really going to be counterproductive to you in the end.
Yeah, it feels like I'm making this decision because I can, not because it's better for us and our goals.
Yeah, and you can make the argument of like, yes, we have all this real estate that we need that sits empty. Sure. Again, though, if you're having people, like it's still, you still should be taking it down into more the looking at it from the micro lens of the different, you know, different teams in that example and what they need. Because if ultimately you're looking at your profitability and your productivity, then I want the teams that function the best in the right environment to be in those, you know, setups to be successful.
Right. Whatever that may be, remote, hybrid, or fully in office. I remember when the big push for the return to work was happening and somebody released, I think it was a notice from Microsoft to the product team behind Microsoft Teams. And they were just laughing at the irony that they said that the team who produces Teams can no longer use Teams as a viable way to be a high-performance team.
That is ridiculous, right?
Right? It's like we have an entire product predicated on the fact that we're not all sitting around the same table in the same environment, same floor. But you're, it's just that sort of like the math isn't mathing again.
Absolutely.
So how do you compare or contrast the notion of trust with psychological safety? That's a tool that I utilize in my practice. And even in talking with colleagues and mentors in the coaching profession, when we talk about trust, it feels like it could flow into psychological safety, but I believe we have words matter and there's a distinction. How have y'all separated those terms? Even if those concepts may work together, it does seem like they have their own lanes to play in.
Yeah. So if I may, let me step back and just kind of talk about that aspect of the domains that we use to measure and then and answer your question. So when we set out to do this research, we were really curious because of all the disruption happening in our world, AI, back to work policies on short notice, all these different things. And we were hearing rumblings from our clients about this trust word. And so we partnered with a PhD, it's an anthropologist in workplace culture, and we went out and set out to do this, to do a real, real deep research survey. And so what we framed it around was these five domains that became a performance index. Psychological safety is one of those five. And okay. what we looked at around that was really this measuring, do employees feel safe to speak up, to ask questions, to raise concerns mm-hmm. without any fear of retribution?
Right.
Or anyone being dismissed and all of that. And so that was one of the five. And what we really wanted to understand was like, where, how does that come into play? And what was really fascinating with the survey was that we saw that there, over the past 24 months, 71% of people responded that they had one of these disruptions we talked about. So personal or professional. And we listed them out. And those were people that were people leaders and people that are individual contributors. And of that, that created a baseline, though, of people who hadn't actually been identified with any of those disruptors. So they created this baseline. So when we looked to measure this, what we were finding was people who felt like they could speak up, that they could say, hey, this doesn't, I'm not sure why, how this fits into our strategy, how we think this is, you know, how this impacts our team. Can you tell us? They felt that they were in a very high trust organization if they felt like they could bring those questions forward, they felt like they were heard, that they were able to be given an answer that they felt was honest or clarifying. And that was one of those really critical pieces. And so when we looked at those domains of like psychological safety, there was a series of statements that were attached to that domain that people were then responding to. And I think that it's such a critical factor. I can think of, you know, stories from my early in my career where there was no psychological safety at all. And that got proven very quickly. And so I think that's a factor that, again, although leaders may be well-intended and maybe don't intend to shut down a question, if they're not really paying attention, that can happen very easily.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I've experienced that at work and leading people, but also just in parenting, where it's you may have shut something down or said no, but the way you said it or processed it, you're like, no, I'm being matter of fact, or I was in a rush. But then the next time something needed to be brought up, it was either slowly brought up or not brought up until later. And you're like, well, why didn't you tell me? Well, the last time I said something like this, you did X. And I'm like, I had no idea.
Right.
So which kind of brings me to something I'm now pondering, which is, it sounds like trust is a collaborative effort. I don't think it can just be on the leader to create, because they could do all the right things and I think you could still mistrust them. And that's not to like point fingers, but does the research show that it's a collaborative effort, that it's a relational component as opposed to a leadership, I'll say tactic for lack of a better word?
Authenticity is really critical. And what we measured was looking at it from an individual's experience with their direct leader, whatever that is in the hierarchy, and what the organization does from their lens. And what was really fascinating was that trust is the strongest and breaks the most significantly at that direct leader level. And that really is because of how they're managing in their day-to-day aspects. So, you know, when you say they could do the right things, I think if they're doing things by like the corporate playbook, that's not going to be authentic in that relationship building side. And so I think that trust, the whole, you know, I feel like you have my back sentiment is really missing. You know, in that way. One of the other things we found through this research was that trust isn't just by title, right? There's many people that people trust on the team that have that influence that really needs to be recognized, because that's a really critical factor. You know, we were looking at things like some of the things that were absolute trust builders, if you will, were things like, you know, open and honest communication about like where, you know, what's happening during this change, thinking about fair treatment of employees. So like, if we have some hard decisions to make, are people treated fairly in that process? Opportunities to voice those concerns around that psychological safety. And then really also like this visible alignment, as you were describing in your strategy example, right? The visible alignment of like why we're making these moves or these pivots, and how does that actually align to my role in the work I do? And so, yes, those are definitely, there's relationship in all that, right? And as managers, there's a significant mm-hmm. amount of responsibility to be, you know, modeling and showcasing that. I also do agree, though, as individuals inside an organization, we need to be, you know, showing up and speaking up and saying, you know, when something doesn't land right and all that. What we were just saying a moment ago matters, though, about how that leader then responds and then cleans up a mess. None of us are perfect. And so your parent example is a great example of having to go back and say, I didn't realize that landed that way. I'm sorry. That's where that we can be building that trust as well. I think, you know, as you had said early on, if it's I don't think they mean it that way. I think you get that benefit of the doubt for as long as you kind of have that bank account filled, if you will, of the emotional type of bank account. And that goes away if you don't apologize, if you don't recognize where you step in the mud and you have to try to clean it up.
Right. Where you rupture, but don't repair.
Yes.
You just leave something broken.
Yeah.
Which in some cases, and I'm trying to think of where I heard it, because I want to cite sources and not just keep stealing things as if I came up with them. But there are some cases where relationships that have been ruptured and repaired end up being stronger than those that there's never been any perceived rupture before.
Oh, absolutely.
This is what was maybe coming up for me and the way you were describing it. It sounds like with the authenticity and like, did I do all the right things right? But maybe I did them in a weird way that seemed inauthentic. Does this come down to a character issue?
I don't think it's
to where you,
well, say more.
Character in that, like you could do all the right things to build trust, but still be perceived as untrustworthy. Right. If it's inauthentic, mm-hmm. that there's a quality about you that there's some people that I've come across, they've not wronged me in any way or done anything. There's just something that like, and I think maybe moms are better at this. They get that mom's intuition of people around their kids, right? It's like, I don't know what it is, but there's something I don't trust about this interaction or this person or this environment. And, you know, and it could be just like the Holy Spirit's talking to moms and leaving the dad. The dads are like, what? I'll lift something heavy. what role does character play in all of this? Because again, otherwise trust could become this, if we can measure it and we can move it, then it's something that could be manipulated, which is antithetical to trust itself.
So I think character, there's always going to be a character aspect of whether you're well-intended or you're not, right? You're just out for yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you describe coming through. I think what happens more often than not, and what we're seeing in this research, is that sometimes people just have serious blind spots to what they're doing and not realizing how negatively impacting it is, whether that's policy at the organizational and policy level, whether that's just in the, you know, I haven't really checked in to understand what's going on. Like now that you're, you know, maybe you're showing up work 10 minutes later than you have been. And I haven't really come in to say, Hey, I just want to check in. How's everything going? You know, what's going on with mm-hmm. your family? Is everything okay? So I think that sometimes it's just those type of blind spots or, you know, leaders that have to deliver maybe a tough message or a pivot change. And they're just doing the parroting of the corporate speak. That absolutely is going to be very thin and just people are going to see through it really quickly. So I think that a lot of times there's a little bit more of the of just being clueless than it is a character flaw.
Gotcha. Yeah, you may be a blissful idiot just running around. Some people are bulls in a china shop. Yeah. Some people are just like accident prone and they're tripping over everything. And you're like, I don't think they're meaning to be this destructive, but they just blew up a building.
I can tell you a quick story. There's a CEO who I did evaluation work for a number of years. And over the course of a period of time, everybody agreed. Tremendous human being, like wonderful human being, really difficult, like a leader who just kept getting in his own way. And like, they could understand, they could say like, no, he's really a good person, but we just need him to like get these basic leadership things down because it's absolutely undermining the trust of our team. There was a situation that came up where he had to deliver a message. You know, they brought the whole organization together and was trying to allow for that psychological safety and people to ask questions about some of the direction the organization was going. And when the question was asked and he replied, because he didn't like how the question was asked, he went to relying solely on all this data and arguing to make this case that his data was more right than they were. So there's these kind of situations we get into where it's not that they're bad, a bad character of personality, but literally a cluelessness. And some of these things that it takes to learn as leaders are really challenging. They're really hard. That's why not everybody is really cut out to be a leader that people want to follow. And I think that's but I also think there's a lot of things that could easily be fixed that our research showed that people are just clueless to.
Yeah. Which should help us for those of us who've been in positions or may still, and everybody's a leader and a follower in different contexts, right? Yep. And hopefully in what they're hearing you say is that there's probably a larger space to give grace to some leaders, like maybe start with the assumption they could just be clueless.
Yeah.
They don't even know before they go, oh my gosh, that was so like there was bad intent and malice and everything and spite behind it. It's like, no, just chalk it up to stupidity and ignorance. Well, Lord knows I've got plenty of it.
Well, and to your point, what you said earlier, right? This is an opportunity for somebody, you know, it is a relationship of two people. So it is an opportunity to come and say, hey, I need to share with you how that comment, you know, landed with me. I'm not sure if that's what you were intending, but I'd like to talk about it. That feels vulnerable. That's actually a sign of strength. And I think that is an opportunity for people to assert more of their own point of view around something that just is like, hey, this feels misaligned, or to say, hey, I don't feel like our team is actually fostering trust. This is what I feel like what's happening. And I think we want to talk about it because we said we wanted a different outcome, right?
Right. Which that's a beautiful segue into something I was curious about, which is what is the role or responsibility in a leadership dynamic of the direct report in fostering trust in the relationship? Because it can be very easy for whether it's trust or any other topic that you and I might, you know, go and evangelize and talk about or coach people on, say, well, it starts with the leader and it's all on the leader. And it's like, don't get me wrong. Leadership comes with a lot more responsibilities, but I don't think it's a one-way street, as you were saying before. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about is there is a relational aspect. And I think you just gave a great example of, hey, when you said this, this is how it sounded to me, or a recent phrase someone taught me that I'm trying to work into my normal language, which is when you say that, the story I tell myself is that you hate me, think I'm stupid, and I'm about to get fired.
Right.
Or whatever that may be. How could people who are reporting up, because not everybody's CEO and even executives have to report up at some level, how do they play a role in fostering trust when maybe they're on the lower side of the power dynamic?
I think that example you just gave is, you know, that kind of reframing is really a good one. It's, you know, really thinking about if I'm starting to gossip about it, if I'm starting to tell a story in my head, that's probably an indicator that I need to go have a conversation and I need to get more clarity. We know in the work you and I do that there's this, we could always reinforce our belief systems, right? And there's formal models around that tell us how true that is. And we can really find ourselves trying to justify why that person acted the way they did, whether it was in our favor or not. And so I think as just individuals inside organizations, the ability to say, hey, I'd like to talk about this scenario or what happened, or here's, I was curious when you said that, what was the context behind it? Because I think maybe you're missing this other part of the story about the work being done. I mean, I had a conversation like that recently with someone who said, oh, it'd be really great if we did X, Y, and Z. I said, oh, but we are. You're missing that context because you weren't in that other meeting we had. And so I think sometimes it's just, we move fast in business, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we aren't all able to be in the same meetings. And so we can't assume we're all tracking at the same speed. We do have to stop and say, help me fill in the blank when something just feels off. So I think what makes it challenging, like we were talking about and what you brought up before, was if people feel like they dip a toe in, or they know somebody who dipped a toe in and that didn't go so well, that's going to immediately stop anybody from doing it more, yeah. right? And so who else wants to be a sacrificial lamb in that way? That just doesn't seem like a good idea.
Yeah, totally goes against our brain's wiring towards survival, even if that means, you know, we may not be worried about lions on the Serengeti anymore, mm-hmm. but we are worried about our boss going on the warpath and just firing us because he had heartburn and I said the wrong thing in a meeting.
Yeah. And I can remember a story from, I'll save the listeners for another time, but I can remember that exact situation happening when I was young in my career. And boy, did it really reinforced why I do the work today, but it also absolutely made really clear to me that this was not the kind of organization I was in at the time that I would be able to trust.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little easier to learn, what we don't like, what we don't want from the negatives. And hopefully, you know, we don't repeat that. We'll make plenty of our own mistakes right. without having to repeat somebody else's.
Huge growth opportunities in those moments though. That's for sure.
Yes. And amen. Now, can you talk a little bit about trust elasticity?
Yeah.
Because the first thing that comes to mind is not necessarily like rubber bands, but I'm thinking about like neuroplasticity and just the way that the brain can be shaped. Like that's the first thing that came to my mind, probably because I'm a nerd. Mm-hmm. But can you talk a bit about what that means and how that shows the resiliency and some of those things?
Yeah. So when we were measuring this, everything, you know, is what I'd like to do is at the end, make sure your listeners have the report so they can check it out. So what it talks to is how we went about the measurement and how they can replicate the measurement. But it also is really around this idea of how far can an organization or these relationships really stretch before they break. And what we found was by using these five dimensions of measurement to measure that they can stretch pretty far. And what we also saw that was really incredible was that for those organizations that leaned into disruption, that really tried to do something in the right, with the right intent, the right move, and people could see they tried, there was what we call the trust dividend, which had a 12% growth above those who said they had no disruption at all. So what it told us was that you shouldn't be necessarily avoiding this disruption, but you could actually be leaning in. So that elasticity could really grow more significantly when you have that. Yeah. If you actually good faith effort to lean into disruption versus try to mitigate it and ignore it.
Yeah. It's almost like it's okay to fail forward because, you know, there's all sorts of quotes and things like that. But the one that comes to mind is, I think it's the Winston Churchill quote about the man in the arena. Mm-hmm. And like you at least you're in the arena. At least you were daring to steal Brene Brown's book, you know, Daring Greatly.
Right.
I think that at least you were trying and you failed. And I think people forgive that and can hang in there more than someone who's just trying to protect everything and totally risk adverse and don't make the wrong steps. Like the authenticity piece, like sometimes when we're reading from the company line and saying that, some people are like, well, what do you actually think?
Yeah, exactly.
That's and then they true. Go, and they go, I don't know what I think. I'm still processing. Like that would be an honest response instead of having an honest response,
right? It could say, hey, I'm not sure how this impacts us yet. I'm going to figure that out. I want to follow up with you all. I know that this is what's known today. I mean, translating it, one of the things we say that's such a really strong kind of best practice is translating that big picture speak into how it impacts, you know, the team today and what it means for our particular team and the work we do.
Yeah. Connecting them to their role in the story.
Yeah, their role in the story.
The company and where we're going.
Yeah.
Because people want to have meaning. They want to feel like what I do every day matters to this place. I don't want to feel like I'm just collecting a check. Bosses generally, when I talk to executives, they're like, well, I think they're just here. They punch in, punch out and collect a check. It's like, well, what are you doing to help them see their contribution? It's easy for you to see it. You're at the top of the pyramid, so to speak, but it's not as easy or maybe even as natural. It may just be a weak muscle that no one's ever taught them how to connect their work with their impact.
Exactly. And again, when we're moving so fast, we can, and when you're at the top of the pyramid, you can assume everybody just knows that because of what they were hired for. And that's just not the case. We talk about that strategy and the work we're doing on a much more frequent basis than people that are actually down doing the work. And so I think that's one of those missed opportunities for individuals and leaders to be able to from that trust building perspective.
Yeah, that's really good. My mom taught me what happens when you assume, and that has really stuck with me. And if you have no idea what we're talking about, go ask an elder millennial or somebody will tell you what it means. I felt like it got repeated to me over and over again. And I was like, fine, I'll be more curious and ask more questions first, mom. Message received.
Yeah.
Well, Kim, this has been a fascinating conversation. I love this topic. I love talking about these sorts of things. Anyways, I even made a career out of it. But can you tell the listener, really, if they're consuming this, and regardless of position, but they're thinking, I want to be that sort of that high trust leader. I want to be a leader worth following or worth being trusted. That doesn't happen overnight. But what could they do to take a baby step in the next 24 hours, spending little to no money, to become a more trusted leader?
Yeah. So let's talk about it from two ways. So I think the one thing is just start making sure you know your people. You know, what's going on with them? Do you know what some of their challenges are? And I'm not saying you're trying to pry into their personal world, but people want to feel seen and heard. And the reality is we are not able to check our world at the door when we come in to work. It's just a very different world these days. So really understand what's going on with your people. I think the other thing is one of the things that we've coined is called the 5 C's of trust framework. And it's a really simple framework that helps, you know, giving leaders or any individuals as well a place to start. So we talk about the context. So, you know, what's changing and why it matters? What's the context that's shifting around us about what the situation is? And if we are filtering it through just what we want to believe or see, that's something to put a check on for ourselves. You know, what's the commitment that we want to make? So what are the things that we're committed to making sure don't change, don't get disrupted, that we believe are really foundational? And that can still be at a team level as well. So context, commitment. The third one is really thinking about change. So what is it that we are going to change? It goes back to this idea of fairness and clarity too. If we can think about it from this lens, we can then articulate, well, there are these things that are going to change and here's what they are and here's the timeline. Thinking about doing it from a care perspective, right? So how can we, you know, support people through a change if it's a change of where we're knowing we're going to end up having to let people go and lay off, or if it's just a change of a reorg, or maybe it's just a change of a tool that everybody's been using and we're no longer going to use it. And it feels like it's rocking people's world through workflow, right? So like, how can we really support them through that change? And then the call to action. So what can we do this week to help them? So is it through something tactical like, let's have conversations about it? Is it let's talk about the small movements of what's going to need to come off your plate? Like all of those things that feel, sometimes it feels like people should just figure it out themselves or be able to. It's just not, sometimes we just need a little bit of, you know, a little bit of help to figure out where should we be putting that focus. So that 5 C's of trust framework is a really nice place to start. Thinking about it from context, commitment, change, care, and call to action.
I really like that. Now I need to go write that down. Maybe my teenagers will be less angsty if I approach them with those, but still pray for me. Kim, thank you so much for spending some time with me today. This was, again, fascinating. I love this stuff. Love the research that you and Spark Effect are doing. It's needed. I think maybe I hate the phrase now more than ever because COVID ruined it for me. I should have turned it into a drinking game at some point, but I think cynicism and skepticism and things like that are at an all-time high. Mm-hmm. And so I think trust really is a core missing element just in society, let alone leading organizations and trying to create movements and positive impact in the world. So I'm grateful there are people like you and your team that are out there fighting a good fight. If somebody wanted to know more about your work, more about the report, things like that, where do they connect with you, Spark Effect, get the report, or anything else you direct them to?
Yes. So we want to make the report available to them and also a leader's guide that will give some of these more tactical things that they can do do that will benefit individual contributors as well. So they can go to sparkeffect.com/HLT, and that will be a specific page, yes, for your listeners. And then I am always thrilled to connect with people on LinkedIn and would love for them to reach out to us. And then, of course, as you mentioned at the top of the episode, I have a podcast as well called Courage to Advance, and we're having really dynamic conversations, as are you here. And so I'd love for them to come check us out there and see what that's all about.
We will make sure all of that is linked up, including the YouTube and Instagram. So if they, I don't know, we're photographing trust. That's how tangible you've made trust, is you can photograph it. That feels like a scientific breakthrough. But thank you so much. Listeners, thank you for spending some time with me and Kim. Like, we don't take this for granted. We know you have many choices when it comes to your podcasting options, and we thank you for flying with us. But if this conversation impacted you or any of the others, please like, rate, review, subscribe, give feedback. I love doing these sorts of things, just like Kim does on her show, and we're both guests on different shows, but at the end of the day, we're here for you. We want to create conversations, topics, content, things that will help you in your journey and in your leadership, and your interaction with the content helps others find it and become aware of it, algorithms and whatnot. So do me a big favor and leave some comments. I do want to read those and keep shaping these conversations to help you take your next step. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you live. We'll see you.